You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Friday, February 22nd. I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at fearthestore.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. Today's show is not going to cover Cavs-Suns. The Cavs did look excellent in that game. A fantastic performance from them. Kevin Love really looked good. Jetty Osman really looked good. Not the best Colin Sexton game, but a good game for virtually every other part of the Cavs rotation right now. Like what David Nwaba did, like what Larry Nance Jr. did as well. A very positive performance in terms of the quality of play. Is losing maybe better for them right now? Yes, but in a season that has been full of crappy losses to crappy teams, where the Cavs have been the crappiest of the crap, it was really good to see them play quality. Kevin Love is just injecting new life into that team. They play faster, they look better. The biggest thing you can say. We're going to get into his impact a little bit more as we see him play this weekend, first against Memphis, and then Monday they play Portland. So a different quality of team as they progress here, going from a really bad team in Phoenix to a slightly better team in the Grizzlies and obviously a playoff team in Memphis these next couple games. So we'll get more into that, talk more about the Grizzlies and Suns games on Monday show when we look back at the weekend slash Thursday. But today's show is all about the NBA Draft. It is Draft Friday with Trevor Magnotti at Illegal Screens on Twitter, host of the Thick Jacked Frames podcast. So, without further ado, here is me and Trevor answering your mailbag questions about the 2019 NBA Draft. Hope you guys enjoy. Thanks for listening. Back Sunday, recap of Cavs-Grizzlies in your feeds before we do a broader breakdown on Monday's show. So we'll talk to you on Sunday. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the game Saturday. And here's Trevor. And we are back for Draft Friday. Joining me, as always, is the host of the great Thick Jacked Frames podcast, a new Fear the Sword NBA Draft podcast, and the writer at Fear the Sword and a writer at The Step Back. It is Trevor Magnotti. You can find him on Twitter at Illegal Screens. Trevor, what's going on?
Not much. Watching Duke, North Carolina as we record here on Wednesday, and I'm excited to be back. It's been a few weeks, and so let's talk some updates.
So I think it was good, frankly, dude, that we did take a little bit of a break. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about the draft for a while, but we are, I think, in a good position here to talk through a big board, answer some questions. Now, Trevor, I just want to ask, obviously, we don't think Zion's injury is like anything that's going to plummet his draft stock. But right now, it's February 20th as we record. People will be listening to this on the 22nd. Give me your just kind of general top five-ish prospects right now, and then we're going to get into some questions.
So my top five stays pretty similar to what it was with my January big board update. Tier one by himself at the top, Zion Williamson still, and probably going to remain that way until the draft comes up. Tier two, RJ Barrett and Jared Culver, both together as two and three. And then tier three is a bunch of different names, but I've got Bol Bol at number four, Cam Reddish at number five. So I think it's still the same group overall, the only change being Reddish moving down, Bol moving up.
So I think that's about correct. You have to know this a lot more than me. There are guys later into the draft that I think fascinate me a little bit more than some of the guys that actually would say are higher, just because I think there are some scary scenarios for some of these guys. But we're going to take some questions in the future. If people want to submit draft-centric mailbag questions or any mailbag questions, drop those to @LockedOnCavs on Twitter or to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. The first question we're going to take comes from Ben_Pfeiffer. And then there's another underscore there. He asks us, how many players would you be okay with taking at number two? So obviously the Cavs could end up with number two. According to the Tankathon pick odds, that they only have a 13.4% chance of that pick. That is, and that assumes that they would stay in the among the three worst teams in the league. That obviously would mean that Zion Williamson is not going to be Cleveland Cavalier because he's going to go number one. Trevor, how many players that based on your big board would you actually be comfortable with taking at number two and not consider like trading back?
Yeah, this is an interesting question. Taking it from a Cavs perspective, I think there's really only two guys that I would consider taking at the number two spot, which would be RJ Barrett and Jarrett Culver. They are pretty much the only guys that I think are good enough to be able to fit in on this team and be able to provide kind of that extra tier of value. I think when you're looking at it in a vacuum, there are a couple more guys that I would add in this conversation. One that's being thrown around a lot as a number two guy, and then a second that kind of could provide the value of that on specific teams. John Morant, obviously, I think deserves to be in the number two conversation for some teams more than others. I'm a little bit down on him compared to the consensus, but I think that there's an argument that he becomes kind of that primary initiator, number one point guard in the class type that is definitely worth a number two pick, especially if you're not super high on RJ Barrett and his upper echelon ceiling, kind of like I am. So I could see an argument for John Morant. I also could see, you know, if there's a situation where trying to think of a good team that would make sense here, or that would make sense for him to go. Like, if you're Sacramento, because for once they're not going to be in the lottery. Like, if you're Dallas, say, and you end up getting wafted into that spot where they end up keeping their pick, a guy who could make a lot of sense would be Jackson Hayes of Texas. He's kind of been a riser for most people throughout the draft process, and he's up a little bit for me, even above number 10 where I had him last time. I think that there's an argument that he could end up being the second most productive player in this class because of his passing ability and of the top flight defensive production that he could end up providing at the NBA level just because of his baseline of athleticism and instincts. So I think there's an argument where he could be the number two guy too. So I think there's four guys that I would maybe value there, but really only two for the Cavs, and really only one, because I think if you're the Cavs and you're looking at Barrett versus Culver and you're trying to figure out which one is going to be the better guy in your development system and next to your other young guys that you have on the team, I think Barrett is probably the guy that ends up edging Culver a little bit just because he does have that shot creation ability that I think is going to be more valuable for this team moving forward.
I tend to agree with you. I would say that I think it's Barrett. It should be the clear number two guy in the Cavs' ward based on what we know right now. Culver would have a lot of appeal to me as well. We're going to get to John Morant. I got a question about him that we'll discuss. But I do think for what the Cavs need and what sort of makes sense, I do think it should be really Barrett and Culver are sort of the two lead options there. Trevor, if there was one other guy that you would say could make it in number three, and I know you talked about a couple guys, but would there be one guy in particular that would make sense to you theoretically as a number two, as another option number two?
I think there's a scenario where if Bol Bol doesn't get hurt that he's in the conversation for this number two guy. I think that he, just with his shooting ability and kind of the hints of that upper tier offensive creation that he showed at Oregon being at his size, I think there's a scenario where he ends up being the second best player in this class as well. The injury kind of nukes that a little bit for me. So I think that if he comes out at the draft combine, he looks 100% healthy and looks like he has made advancements in his game in the way that like a Mo Bamba did last year during the combine process, then I think that he can vault himself into the conversation too.
Well, let's see if Sheck West or some other rapper drops a song about Bol Bol, because I think there's potential for that too. And that seems to just make Mo Bamba relevant in people's minds. Next question is going to also come from Twitter. It comes from Ricky Scaria, at Scaria1. Your Scaria1 is how I think you pronounce it. If I butchered that, my bad. But he asked, and speaking of Bol Bol, where are you on Bol Bol? And then also, where are you on Jonte in reference to Jonte Murray? And how much does health factor in? Trevor, I'll take this one first because I just want to, I'm going to give you a chance to recoup your breath for a second. But with Bol Bol, he scares me just based on the profile, based on the injuries. Like, he scares me as a prospect. I get the appeal, but he just scares me, frankly. with Jontay Porter, it's not great that he came is going to come off an injury. I think there's something about him that just projects to me as maybe more actually though, maybe not the upside of being a star or a lead scorer, but like he maybe just might end up being more solid than his brother, who is Michael Porter, who plays for the Denver Nuggets, although he's not played yet this in his career. I think both could be interesting at the right point for the Cavs. I know Jonta is much higher on your board than he is on a lot of other people's. I'd love for you to explain that. But my preference for me, if I was the Cavs, my preference for them would be to prioritize wings over everything else. I think both these guys, again, could be interesting in the right circumstances, but I'm not super in love with either enough to put them ahead of anyone else right now. And at the same time, I do think that the injury history is a little shaky too, especially for me with Bol Bol more so than Jonta.
Yeah, I think that you're right that both of these guys kind of are off the table for the Cavs. Just the center logjam and the five logjam of contracts is, I think, going to preclude them from taking a center with their top pick. So even if they're picking at the number four or five spot, I really don't see a situation where Bol or Porter are really on the table for them, or Hayes for that matter. So I think that kind of limits the discussion of them as fits on the Cavs is just that they're going to be paying Tristan Thompson and Larry Nance next year, probably both of them. In terms of both of them against each other, I'm kind of starting to think that Porter is the better option between the two of them. I've had Bol in my top five since the beginning of the year, and Porter kind of hanging around the back half of the top 10. But the more that you think about it, you know, both of these guys are kind of atypical skill sets for the center position. You know, Jonta is a very skilled passer and has potential as a pull-up shooter. And he's a really smart team defender, but doesn't really have a lot of the vertical athleticism and the things that would make him a really good shot blocker. Bol, meanwhile, doesn't really have the instincts to be a good defender, but does show some quality moments on that end. And he has the pull-up range from three and the ball handling ability that can potentially make him a really valuable offensive player as well. So the skill sets are very similar. And the injury history is very similar. You know, both of these guys coming off scary injuries on their face. And when you compare the skill sets and when you compare the injury, it's really hard to justify for me having Bol ahead of Porter. And I don't think that I'm going to have him ahead of Porter on my next board, because in terms of the injury, I think that the ACL is going to be easier for Porter to come back from. I think it's going to have less chance of turning into a long-term standing issue in terms of future injuries for him than a 7'3" guy that's really thin that we're already worried a little bit about bone health with getting a stress fracture. So I think that makes a huge difference. And also, you know, I think that if Bol succeeds as a player, he's going to succeed in a very non-traditional role to what we expect guys of his size to be able to do at the NBA level, even more than like Kristaps Porzingis, who's the same height. I think that Bol's skill set even stretches a little bit beyond what Kristaps is in terms of how it deviates from the traditional center. Porter, I think, is a little bit more along the lines of what we expect a modern NBA center to look like. So I think that his skill set's going to translate a little bit better as well. So I think I'm going to be moving Porter up and Bol down on my next update. I'm not quite ready to put Porter into my top three as some guys. I know Ben, who actually gave us our first question, he has Porter as his number two guy in the class. And I'm not ready to do that quite yet. But I think that he, if he shows he's healthy, does have a chance to break into that tier two, just because his IQ on both ends and his skill set are so valuable that I think that putting him below Bol just doesn't make sense to me at this point. So that's kind of where I'm at with both these guys. I think they're much more similar in terms of skill set than we've kind of given them credit. And I think that Porter has a better chance of reaching his upper tier outcomes than Bol does.
I think that makes all the sense in the world. My next question comes from my dad, because he watched Ja Morant and Murray State play Austin Peay not too long ago. And he was like, Chris, I'm paraphrasing, why would the Cavs not take Ja Morant? That dude seems to have at all. He seems to have a bunch of star potential. Why does Ja Morant not make sense for the Cavs, Trevor? Tell, and I think he's a guy that has a lot of, just he's going to have a lot of kind of appeal to people because of what he does and how much he scores and everything. Why does he not make sense for the Cavs?
Well, we talked about it a little bit before here, and it the biggest thing to me is that above all of the concerns that I have for Morant's skill set, the three-point shooting consistency, the upper-tier physical athleticism, meaning how is he going to put strength on and be able to get a little bit more coordinated without losing a lot of the vertical explosion that makes him so special, and the defensive concerns, which are very valid. Outside of all that stuff, it's just the skill sets overlap way too much with him and Colin Sexton for me. I don't think that you can play both of those guys together because Morant is going to need the touches to be able to create in a lot of the same spots that Sexton does. You know, they're both going to be guys that are going to isolate out from three. If they're going to attack off ball, it's probably going to come from the corners. They're going to be running a lot of pick and roll and a lot of, you know, secondary stuff off screens. I think that both guys are going to get utilized in very similar ways. And I am not a proponent, as we've talked about before, of taking two guys that play with a lot of skill overlap and then trying to juggle in kind of a your turn, my turn situation. You can do that with star players in the NBA. It never goes well with young guys. And you don't want to put them in a situation where you're having – you know, you're having both guys kind of compete with each other to be able to get the possessions that they need to be able to make their developmental steps that they need. So that is my biggest reason that I'm not high on Morant for the Cavs, is just if you have any value in Colin Sexton at all, which you should because, you know, you spent this top 10 pick on him, you should probably take a couple more than a single season to figure out if he's going to be good or not, because rookie point guards are usually terrible. I just don't think that there's going to be a good outcome with pairing those two together and trying to develop both of them at the same time, because it's going to be counterproductive for one of them.
100%. I'm agreeing on that. I do think there is a scenario where he could make sense. I would rather almost take him rather than a big at the top of the draft, but that just to me is about the roster construction and where the league is going. Is that a wrong inclination on your part, Trevor, or do you agree with me there?
No, I kind of agree. I think there are spots where he's going to provide value, and I think that there are going to be situations where he could land and be a very good player. I just don't think that, you know, when you're in this beginning situation of trying to construct a roster of talent and you're in the talent and asset acquisition stage, that you want to get guys who are going to – you're going to have to make really difficult decisions about in the future. I think that's my biggest concern, is I don't want to be in a situation where we're in 2021 and we have to trade one of our first two top 10 picks after LeBron left because they don't coexist together.
I think that's fair. Trevor, this question, our kind of last big mailbag question here, comes from me, because I have not talked about this, and it's just something that I think will be worth kind of getting into. Who is a prospect that is a first round talent, you think, but that you feel like you have the biggest divide on, as opposed to general draft Twitter, general evaluations that you see from Gavoni or the Stepien or whatever? Who's a guy that you just are widely evaluating differently, good or bad, positively or negatively, than who's out there right now?
Positively, I talked about this a little bit on my podcast this last week. Kobe White is my guy.
Go listen to that episode. It is the best breakdown, Trevor. It's a fantastic breakdown. I'm not just pumping it full of gas because, like, I am involved with this project with Trevor, but great, great breakdown of one Kobe White.
Yeah, I do not understand why he is getting ranked like 25th. By mainstream places. I get that he's thin. I get that he's a little bit out of control and he doesn't make really good decisions consistently right now. He is one of the best passers in the draft. He is one of the best pull-up shooters in the draft. And I trust that he's going to be able to become a good finisher more than I trust John Morant or Darius Garland, who are kind of his kind of the guys that I have in a similar tier in terms of the point guard position. I just do not understand why he is a guy that is getting left behind in this class when there really isn't much in terms of star potential at the top. I think that his fit on the Cavs would be really good in particular. So maybe that's why I'm a little bit more high on him than kind of general people. But I think that just doesn't make sense to me that he is being valued kind of along the lines of like Shamori Ponds of St. John's, who is going to be probably a backup point guard in the league. I think that White has clear starter potential and is going to get better. And I think that he would be a steal if the Cavs were able to get him with their second pick. I think that the guy that I'm a little bit lower than draft Twitter on, or I'm the most different than draft Twitter on, would be Talen Horton Tucker of Iowa State. I think that he's a guy that is getting pumped up a lot because he has he's 6'4", but he has a 7-foot wingspan. He's very bulky, but still has a lot of good athleticism and is kind of being touted as kind of this guy who probably is going to be a good to lockdown defender in the NBA and has some offensive creation ability as well. So a lot of people like that. I just don't think that he's consistent enough and really knows how to play basketball enough to deserve being like a lottery level projection, like a lot of draft Twitter guys have him as. I think that he's a really inconsistent decision maker. He's a really hesitant driver when he gets the ball and he doesn't really make split decisions very well. And he gets lost off ball a little bit. He just doesn't really understand the mechanics of how the flow of the game works at this point. And I don't really know if that's something with his upbringing, whether he, you know, started playing basketball late or whatever, but I think that that's something that I want to see a little bit more of before I vault him into that level. So he's a guy that I'm kind of keeping on the back burner as like a second round pick when a lot of people are kind of throwing him up in the first round. And then the last one that I just, as I'm scrolling here, I see, cause it's one that I always forget because I don't even acknowledge that he's a first round level prospect, but a lot of places are putting him, you know, even top 10, is Rui Hachimura of Gonzaga. Rui is the worst interior defender as a big that I have ever seen play major college basketball. He's a really good scorer at the elbow, yeah, and he's showing a little bit more shot making, but he is a offense focused four that doesn't have elite scoring instincts and has no clue what to do on the defensive end. And I just don't know how that's frankly, I don't know how that's even draftable in the first round, much less in the top 10. But teams are enamored with him because he's got a cool story and he puts up really good numbers for Gonzaga, and he's going to get someone fired.
There's always a couple of guys like that. And I think there's a lot of potential for like John Morant and Bol Bol to be that, frankly. Trevor, we're going to wrap it up on this last thing. We've got a bunch of requests to do mock drafts, to do fake trades, a bunch of stuff like that. It is too early for that. But we are going to, I am on Tankathon. I am going to hit the sim lottery real quick. The Cavs, again, are in the number 3 pole position right now. They can sink as low as number 7, so they'll keep the pick. But we're going to give this a spin. This is obviously all subject to change. Just let's have fun. Let's see where they end up and then see who the Cavs might get in the situation. And hitting it, the Cavs go up to number 2. Phoenix holds at number 1. The Cavs are 2. The Knicks go to 3. This is a pretty boring scenario, frankly, because I'm here for, like, Dallas getting the top pick or something like that. Like, I want the crazy, and I just, like, want Luka, Zion, and Kristaps on one team. I would like the world to burn. I just think that'd be crazy. But if the Cavs are at number 2, we talked about this already. It is RJ Barrett, and it's Jared Culver, and then we go from there.
Yeah, for as much hand-wringing as Justin does about the lottery odds changing, a scenario where it's, like, Phoenix, New York, Cleveland is still probably the most likely result. So this, it's funny that that's the first spin there, but yeah, I think that, you know, I think that if Zion's off the board and they're pick number two, it's pretty clearly RJ. Now, let's kind of move this a little bit further just to kind of add a little bit of zest, because this is a little bit of a boring scenario. If they take RJ Barrett at the number two spot, what position or what kind of player are you looking for at, I think it's 21st, 22nd, wherever the Rockets pick is?
So for me, if I'm let's assume this is the roster for next year. So let's say you're going to have Colin. So let's say you go into next year with this functioning of the roster. So you'll have Colin Sexton, Jetty Osman, Kevin Love, Larry Nance Jr., Tristan Thompson, Jordan Clarkson, David Nwaba is sort of like the rough outline of your roster. You certainly need wings there. You certainly, like, maybe Stauskas is like there on a 1-year deal. Brandon Knight will, you know, theoretically be on the roster as well. Maybe Marquise Chris is still around. Who freaking knows? But I would say you're looking for, you can't be too picky to avoid saying best player available. But the attributes I personally would be looking for, and this is sort of what I'm looking for in general at that pick, is shooting and wing play with a little bit of ball handling. Shooting and kind of like this is the, I don't know how, I can't even remember where he was drafted last year, but a Kevin Huerter type is sort of what I would really like at 21.
Yeah, and he went 19th, so that's perfect range. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking along that lines too, with a little bit more emphasis on defense in terms of the wing that you're picking. I think that you need a guy that is going to be able to take the primary wing assignment as a defender in years two and three, because RJ very clearly is not that guy and is probably never going to be that guy, barring some crazy change in how he plays at the NBA level. So I think that, you know, the best guy for you, I think, and what you are looking for would probably be like Nickeil Alexander Walker of Virginia Tech. You know, really good secondary pick and roll guy, can defend a little bit, but is really going to be kind of like that kind of number two ball handler that the Cavs need. Whereas I'm probably looking a little bit more at like Iggy Brazdeikis of Michigan or Matisse Thybulle of Washington, where I'm putting all of my eggs in the defense and shooting basket, and not really worrying so much about the playmaking. When you've got Barrett and Sexton together, you're expecting a little bit of a leap there. You've got Clarkson to be able to shore that up for whatever that's worth. Getting that guy who can take the 2-3 primary defensive assignment would be huge, because we can't go another season where the only guy on the roster that is able to do that is Chetty, because you need him to do too many other things.
Well, and I think Jetty as a secondary creator has value. I think that is something like if they can play faster, that's going to be a good thing for him. And if you can keep David Nwaba, even if it's on like a 2-year deal, even if it's a short term deal, that guy's so good at defense. Like, mm-hmm. He's ridiculous on defense that he can help with some of this. He can help you hide RJ. He can help you hide Sexton. He can defend, I think, 1 through 4. I think it's a pretty reasonable thing. Maybe some quicker point guards are an issue for him, but he's super strong. He's super versatile. He can handle a lot of this, and that could be a valuable piece as well. And again, I think you're kind of right on the defensive end there. I think kind of prioritizing guys that can defend is a good thing. I wonder if they try to like shoot for the moon a little bit at that pick, but I also don't think that's like the best idea. Is there? I know in your tiers you have Matthias, and you have the dude from Michigan whose name I'm just going to not try to pronounce here.
Iggy.
Yeah, I'm just going to call him Iggy. Well, I feel like Iggy, like, light or, like, mini, just something that does not respect the greatness that is Andre Iguodala. You have them in different tiers. Iggy is in the Tier 5 projects and high-risk prospects. Matthias is in the Tier 4 probable situational role players. To you, is there a big difference in that type of guy, like where you would favor one outcome versus the other if you're the Cavs?
Well, I think that Thybulle, because he's a little bit older, because he's a little bit more advanced defensively, and because he's a little bit more mature athletically, I just think you know what you're getting with him a little bit more. Iggy certainly looks great, and he has really impressed throughout this season as a decision maker on offense and as a team defender, despite some pretty significant athleticism concerns. those athleticism concerns are always going to be there, and you don't kind of, or you don't really know how that body is going to physically mature. Like, is he going to be a guy that ends up, you know, putting on a bunch of weight and ends up being like a four? Or is he going to be a guy that, you know, doesn't ever have the quickness to defend the three, but also doesn't have the size to be able to play up a position? So that's why I kind of took him a step down, is that I don't think that we know what he's going to look like at Thibault's age. And that puts a lot of variability in that when you're really looking for somebody who is going to, who you know what their role is going to be at that second pick. I think especially if you're taking like RJ Barrett, or you're taking some of these guys who are, you know, are a little bit more theoretical in terms of what their upper end outcome is going to be, I think you need to swing for a little bit of safety at that pick. So that's kind of why I have those guys separated, and why I would probably put Thibault ahead for the Cavs.
I'm into that. I'm into all of the draft. We're deep into the draft now. Check out Thick Check Frames. Find Trevor on Twitter at Illegal Screens. Read his writing at For the Sword, and read it at The Step Back. You'll be able to find his big boards there. And in the coming months, a whole bunch of great draft profiles at Fear the Sword and over there as well. But Trevor, as always, thank you so much. And can you give us a tease of who you might be talking about on Thick Jacked Frames this week?
Yeah, so Monday, we're going to be coming, or, you know, he's coming off probably his worst game of the year. But we haven't really talked about anybody who is someone with a thick jack frame. We've talked about Brandon Clark and Kobe White, who are both kind of thin guys. So we're just going to steer into some muscle, and we're going to talk about Grant Williams.
I'm here for the thickness. I'm here for the jackness. Grant Williams, Monday, Thick Jack Frame. Subscribe by searching Fear the Sword on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts. Trevor, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.